The best Giants talk in the Bay is on 95.7 The Game. Reaction to every pitch.
Miller throws. He got him with the fastball. Miller's pointing at all the Reds.
Every home run.
High drive! Left field! Out of here!
And every big play.
A little slow roller. Chapman. Barehand! Got it!
It's your fix for Giants baseball.
It is a dream come true, but it's a very recent dream.
The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap.
Hello there. Welcome in to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on this beautiful, foggy Saturday, August 22nd. Giants, stop me if you heard this before. They lost a baseball game last night.
Where's the breaking news sounder?
Yeah, that's it. It doesn't happen very often. It only happens on the days that end in Y, it seems, seems like these days. Giants fall 6-4 to the Boston Red Sox. And, but hey, Rafi Devers made his debut, return, to Fenway Park to mainly boos, but some cheers. And you heard the open there of the show. Eric Miller was pointing at the dugout. He was pointing at Willie Adames last night after striking him out. In the, I believe it was the seventh inning to end it there. Eric Miller comes in and had probably one of his best outings of the year. Three quick outs, two strikeouts, including Adames to end it. And of course, you get the Eric Miller revenge outing against the Giants in the same week that we almost got the Pat Bailey revenge walk-off. Thank God we did not get that the other night. Shout out Dylan Smith for getting that six-out save. But anyway, it is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. I am Sam Lomano here, of course, as always, with Dan Devone. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm well. Speaking of Dylan Smith, one of the sort of bright, shining stars coming out of that bullpen.
Dude, he's the real deal. That's his nickname. Spadoni and I actually had him on the morning roast. What was it, Thursday morning? We chatted with him for a little bit. He's a big Houston Texans fan, actually, we learned.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah. But, no, it was funny. He grew up an Astros fan as well, so, you know, him and all the Giants fans were
celebrating. From Texas?
Yeah, he's from the Houston area, so he grew up in Alabama. But no, he was a really cool guy to talk to. I've gotten a chance to know him a little bit this year, and he's looking like a guy who could potentially be a part of this bullpen next year. And that's kind of where the Giants are at in this part of the season. Not a shocker. It's not about who's going to help them win right now, but it's about who is going to help them beyond this season, Dan. This
is the future.
The big tryout for the 2027 Giants, however much of that team that we get next year because of the lockout, different conversation. So, Dylan Smith playing himself into that conversation there. A guy who, you know, doesn't need to worry about being on the team next year because he will be, for better or worse, is Logan Webb. And Logan Webb had a rough one last night. Was going well those first two innings, got a couple outs in that second, and then he threw that wild pitch that was to Eric Sogard, and then Sogard walked, got another out, but then it fell apart very quickly for Logan Webb last night.
Well, it looks so atypical that you begin to wonder whether he's healthy, and you begin to think about that knee again. And if there's any issues as far as his health, you got to shut him down, right? Like, there's no reason for him to pitch another inning for the remainder of this season. I would sit him because that was just so not Logan Webb. And he's been so good of late, especially in his last three outings. He has been one of the best in baseball. So you would have to think that something's awry. And physically, I'm not sure that he's at 100%. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's something that we learn within the next 48 hours that something's wrong with Logan Webb. And if there's anything concerning Logan Webb, since you didn't trade that guy, he has got to be healthy for next year. That's your investment for the future. So there's no reason for this guy to pitch if there's something wrong with him in terms of his body.
Again, we'll have to find out if that is something going on there. I mean, again, it is pitching. Sometimes you just have a bad day out there. But yeah, that wild pitch there was kind of wild. I don't know if the workload's getting to him, Dan. He will be the last person to hint that that is the case. I don't think it was asked about it yesterday. It was pretty quick post-game pressers from Tony and Logan yesterday, understandably so. I mean, there's just wasn't a whole lot to talk about from that game last night, you know, other than Rafi's return. So, basically, you're just going right to health concerns there? That was your first thought?
Well, what did you think? I mean, to me, the last time we saw him that bad for one inning, the third inning, where he threw like 35 pitches in one frame. To me, usually that speaks because he's so good. And when it happens that quickly, that early, I mean, he hasn't been bounced from a game that early, well, since he was injured.
I think that was the second short start of his career.
I just go to something's got to be wrong with this guy. He just typically is not that bad. And I question as to whether or not the knee's at 100%, or maybe there's another body part that I'm not familiar with, but that did not look like Logan Webb last night.
Yeah, and again, we'll see if he can kind of bounce back in his next start there. It is something to keep an eye on. Again, it's nothing that I've noticed health-wise with him, but that's an interesting point there, and definitely worth keeping an eye on there. And Rizzotto just got my ears. Actually, the third shortest start of his career. So, you know, slightly less disastrous than it would have been if it was the second shortest start of his career. But Logan Webb going into last night, that was his fourth start of the month in the previous 20 innings that he's thrown in the month of August. He had a .90 ERA, 17 strikeouts, two runs allowed. He was on pace to potentially be pitcher of the month again this month here. And as a result, after last night, his ERA for the month of August has ballooned to 2.78. So even with that five-run spurt there in the second, it's still been a pretty solid month overall for Logan Webb. But I agree with you there, Dan. It's definitely concerning to see that happening. If it's a hint of injury, I will agree with you. It gets to a point where the only point to throw him out there is just because, you know, for the fun of the game. And we're in the point of the season where, you know, if you are just slightly banged up, if you need a couple extra days, go ahead and take it, because you're not playing for this year right now. And when I think of that, I immediately think of one Willy Adames as well, he was in the lineup last night, and he's been dealing with back issues. And Dan, he had a rough one on Thursday defensively in the field. And after the game, you hear that he's clutching at that back again. And maybe this could be our first question we get into here on the show. 888-957-9570. What the heck are you going to do with Willy Adames the rest of this season?
You have to shut him down. And this goes back to your guy, Tony Vitello. Tony Vitello has got to take control. He's got to grab the reins and saying, you are not playing. And you want to know why you're not playing? Because you're a detriment to the baseball team. I get it, you're a gamer. I get it, you're a warrior. And I know that you want to play every game. But guess what? My job as a manager is to win games. And you're preventing me from doing that. Take it a step further, Sam. Think about if you're a pitcher, right? If you're a pitcher, what are you all about? I'll answer that for you, because I hate rhetoricals. Outs! Outs! I want outs. I need 27 outs to win a game. That's what this is all about. I either need strikeouts, pop-ups. If there's a ground ball to the shortstop and you can't get down because of your back, or you can't turn a tailor-made double play because there's something wrong with your back, you're hurting me personally.
Mm-hmm.
You need to sit. If there's anything we've learned, or if there's anything that Tony Vitello has learned from year one to year two, because he's going to get another opportunity to come back next year.
We'll be discussing that on the show as well. Don't you worry.
Tony Vitello, at the top of the list, I don't know if it's number one, but it's got to be near the top in terms of things and takeaways from this season, is he has got to take control of the clubhouse when it comes to the veterans. Chapman, you're hurt. You're sitting. You're not dictating what is happening to this baseball team, and the same holds true for you, Willy Adames. You are hurt. You will sit. When will you play again? I will let you know, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're disrespecting or dividing the room. You can still work and respect your veterans, but that has to begin and end with him.
I agree. And Dan, in regards with the Willy Adames playing time, I mean, it's, as I've always said, I very much appreciate Willy Adames' desire to be available. I appreciate that desire to want to play as much of the 162 as you possibly can. But again, as I've all said, there's a bit of a privilege in doing that. If you cannot show that you can go out and play up to that level, then you're just not going to play. The greatest shortstop in Giants franchise history, Brandon Crawford, never once played more than 155 games in a season. Now, Willy Adames, he's played, you know, on track to play slightly less than that. He'll probably come in around 150 to 154 right now if he keeps going. I don't think that's going to happen. That's what he could probably top out at. This is all to say, to your point, Dan, if him not getting on the field is resulting in positive outcomes, then you have to look yourself in the mirror and realize the best thing you can do right now is nothing. And that's a hard thing for a ball player to digest, but that is where, and again, I agree with you, Tony's got to put his foot down here. And with Chapman, the decision was kind of made for him in that the injury was so severe. With Adames, it could like just a 10-day IL stint. A 10-day IL stint right now could do wonders for you because, you know, you go back to needing to get outs for your pitchers. That first error that he had on Thursday, that could have been a double play the end of the inning. Instead, it skips off his arm, goes into the outfield, a ball that you got to be able to make that play if you're a shortstop. If you're a big league shortstop, you have to be able to do that. It would have ended the inning. I believe the Guardians only had two runs at the time, and instead a third run comes in to score, and you go from inning over to extra run coming in because of your defense, and your defense, if it's health-related, then yeah, you're hurting the team being out there. That's just on defense. Never mind the fact that your strikeouts all year long have been hindering this team as well.
Yeah, the decision has to be taken out of his hands. It's not for him to decide that I need to shut it down or I'm hurting the team or I want to play. This is where Tony Vitello again has got to take control. And if there's one thing that, and there's a lot of them, but I think again at the top of the list is that Tony Vitello has to, because if he's the one who's dictating what's happening to the veterans, guess what happens to the younger players? They fall in line. They understand, oh, okay, we understand who the big bear is. We understand who's running this ship. And it's not Chapman, and it's not Adames, it's not Rafael Devers. But if you let Rafael Devers determine whether or not he's coming out of a game for a pinch runner, if you let Landon Roop decide whether or not he wants to come out of a baseball game, if you let Willy Adames fill out the lineup card with him in it despite the fact that he shouldn't be there, then that has an effect on your younger players and you lose control. And that's that to me is the biggest thing that Tony Vitello has to deal with in this offseason. And I wouldn't be surprised if there is some dissension in that clubhouse as to who is the leader. And the respect word, does he have the respect of, forget about the veterans, does he have the respect of the younger players?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned when you let the, who the leaders are. I mean, that's where you get, you have the situation like a couple weeks ago where Landon Roop's kind of giving the stink eye to Tony Vitello. And again, when the veterans on the team are creating this perception that they don't respect the manager, that is the trickle down that you see happen. Now, how serious is it? I don't know. I don't know for sure, Dan. It, on the outside looking in, it doesn't look good, but I also know that things aren't always as they appear. Tony's desire to be deferential, though, to the veteran players, whatever impact it was supposed to have, maybe that was his way of being like, if I could be deferential to them, that's how I get them on my side. That did not, I don't know if that worked out with Willy Adames and Rafi Devers. And again, he is coming back next year. Buster Posey made that clear. It was announced over the weekend, this most recent weekend. And so he's going to need to wipe the slate clean going into spring training of next year. And they're going to have to really learn from whatever, all the mistakes they made this year in terms of how he interacted with those players, how he had to, he set the tone in this clubhouse. Because he's going to have to come in with a bit of a different attitude and mindset next year, Dan, to ensure that the good feelings that we had in spring training, and they were good. Like, I was there, like, for a week at least. Maybe I was just there for the one good week. I don't know. But it felt good in spring training. It felt like this is a team that, again, I don't know about playoffs. I've never believed this team is a playoff team. But I believe this was a team that was going to be fun and interesting for good reasons this year, not fun and interesting for absolutely horrific, nightmarish reasons this year, which is what we've gotten.
The difficult thing with that is, if he's going to change and try and garner respect of his players, that means that you're asking a guy at his age to change his personality, which is really, first of all, A, difficult to do, and B, becomes really obvious. Like, if I'm a player that was here with his team, if I'm Drew Gilbert, and I know who Tony Vitello is, and now he's trying to come in and pretend that he's angry or that he's somebody that's going to confront the veterans, and it's not genuine, then I don't think that the message is hitting with these guys. Yeah. So you basically, as an effective manager, as a coach, or in the NFL or Major League Baseball or NBA, it's an extension of who you are, and it's either you either walk into the room and demand that respect, and you're the sort of person that they want to play for. It can't be manufactured. So, yes, he's going to learn from this, but you want that sort of baked in, if that makes sense. You want that to be an extension of your DNA, not something that he's going to have to incorporate next year, because to me, that becomes a little bit more obvious and transparent to the other players, and I don't know that it necessarily resonates.
Yeah. Well, I think you say changing who he is. I think that's the problem this year, Dan, is I don't think he ever was really who he was, like, or who he is. Like, he just,
who is Tony Vitello?
Well, I mean, if he wasn't the Tony we've seen this year is definitely not the Tony we saw in Tennessee. It's definitely not the Tony that caught this Giants front office's attention. And I think he came in. I think a part
what
of him
was he like
was,
in Tennessee. I don't know.
I mean, he was definitely a fired up guy, a rah rah guy, a high energy guy, a high intensity guy. And I think when he got here, there was a level of he didn't want to come out and be that intense guy right off the bat. Maybe he thought that he needed to ease into it, get people to know him, like him, and then he can maybe be that guy. It's also maybe it's a lot easier for Tony to be that fun guy when you're winning too, because let me just check my notes here. Winning is fun. Yes, I did write that down. Good. So it's hard to do that, but that is where I think Tony really kind of failed out the gate there, is I think he was more a tense version of himself, not a loose version of himself. And you know, Dan, I think back, you know, what's the uh-oh moment of the year? And by that, I mean, what was the moment you were like, uh-oh, this could be a problem? And for me, I go back to game two of the season, you know, the official opening day when Tony's sitting there saying, I brought too much fire and brimstone. And Robbie Ray's like, nah, I don't think that's it. And in that moment, we bring it up a lot here, but in that moment, it's just like, ooh, this probably isn't good. You don't need your manager having his words pushed back on in the second game of the season. I do think Tony got a little too wrapped up in that slow start. And I think it's hard to come out and be that fiery rah-rah guy when you're starting off 3-8. And you're taking responsibility on yourself for why the team's losing, when really the team you got wasn't good enough. The team you had wasn't playing well enough.
Wouldn't you say that every fear that we had of a guy that's never done at the major league level, never played at the major league level, never managed at the major league level, remember, everybody had this sense of trepidation. Well, how's this going to work? Has kind of come to fruition.
Oh, yeah. No, literally every single way this season can have gone wrong has gone wrong.
But, I mean, as it's relegated to Tony Vitello and being a collegiate manager going to the major league level, are you the challenges with him before he even managed his first game with the San Francisco Giants? How are you going to deal with the veterans? How are you going to command their respect? He screwed that up. Mm-hmm. How are you going to be as a field general? How are you going to be able to navigate this whole huge jump from the collegiate level to that of Major League Baseball? And I think, as you know, we're 36 games remaining into the season, and I think every single one of those fears have come to light.
No, it's the reason why I raised eyebrows is, are you sure a college coach can handle this? Or can a college coach make that jump? And I think Rizzotto brought up a great point last week.
Rizzotto!
Half of Tony's prowess in college was being able to recruit guys. You get to a point where you can recruit teams that are simply just too good to lose. You can't do that at the major league level. That said, though, recruiting is about building relationships, relating with other people, convincing people to buy into your message. Maybe some of these younger players, that's easier to do. Guys like Logan Webb, I think he could do that. Logan was quoted in John Shea's story, The Standard, where it was announced that Buster was bringing Tony back. Logan, effusive in his praise for Tony Vitello, and I do believe that Logan is behind on Tony Vitello. But with the question still remains, Adamas and Devers, who, you know, conspicuously were not in that story that John Shea wrote. And I'll be honest, I loved hearing from Logan Webb in that story. Really would have liked to have had Willie Adamas say, like, yeah, I'm excited that Tony is coming back. But the fact that he's not in that story being quoted saying that, it doesn't say that Willie is out on Tony or anything like that, but it doesn't say that he's in on Tony either. And that's what I think a lot of fans are going to point at in regards to the Willie Adamas-Tony Vitello relationship that has just, it's been on the mic. I think it's not been under a microscope this year, Dan, but it's definitely been something that has been on the back of Giants fans' minds in terms of just how are those two getting along behind the scenes?
You look at the team that the Giants are playing this week in the Boston Red Sox, who are now managed by Chad Tracy, and you think about why they made that change, and I've talked about this previously. It's not as though Cora is necessarily a bad manager. It's sometimes you make change for the sake of change, and that's my biggest concern with the Giants, is that you're bringing back Tony Vitello. So that stench from this year is going to creep into next year in spring training. Like when you see him, he's now associated with losing. And I do believe, I don't know that Tracy's a better manager. I don't know that Tracy's necessarily done anything differently than that of Cora and is the reason why the Boston Red Sox went on that epic 18-game winning streak and are now targeted for the playoffs. I don't know what's on Tracy, but it's just the change itself. It's just the fact that you made a change and there's just this sudden sense of, and it's more mental than anything else, we got a new start or this is different. And when it comes to Tony Vitello, I think that he's now, whether it's his fault or not, again, is aligned with this terrible, terrible, one of the worst seasons. They could lose another 100 games this year.
They need to go, I believe, 11 and 24. I'll get the exact numbers in a minute, but yeah, they are staring down that barrel, Dan, for the second time.
My point is, Sam, is that he's now aligned with this year, and his only year in baseball is losing. And how do you remove him from that stigma or that stench? Because, again, a lot of the times you make changes in baseball, it's not a reflection of the coach. It's more about the change itself to reset and mentally have the players have a new approach. But he's coming back, and next year he's the first guy you're going to see at spring training, and the players are going to try and think of this as being an entirely different season. But it's still Tony Vitello at the end of the day and a guy that potentially might lose 100 games in his first year as a manager in the major leagues.
I mean, again, there's lots of managers in this game who have gotten off to really bad starts in their first year and ended up having, you know, very good careers. I mean, Joe Torre, in his first year at the Mets, came in, you know, partly through the season. He was 49-68 in his first season as a manager. Bobby Cox, 69-93 in his first year with the Braves. Bruce Bochy was 70-74 his first year with the Padres in the strike-shortened year. Tony La Russa was 70-90 with the White Sox. Craig Counsell was 68-94 with the Brewers. So Terry Francona, one of the better managers, he was 68-94 in his first year managing. That was with the Phillies back in 1997. So it is possible to have a horrible first year as a rookie manager and still go on and have a successful managerial career. And you'll probably point out that most of those managers ended up having successful careers with other teams. Obviously, Craig Counsell, though, did have success with the Brewers.
Well, Bobby Bochy, Cox was with...
I mean, Bobby Cox is the exception to that. He was a lifelong Brave, and Bochy did have success.
Those with guys are all major leaguers in one...
And I don't know how much that calculus factors into it. I've heard stories that Latin players like to respect guys who actually did play in the big leagues more than guys who didn't. Again, that's just stories I've heard. I don't know if I could personally corroborate that, me not being a Latin Major League Baseball player. I will say this, though, Dan, and this is the risk that they are taking on bringing Tony back. We'll see what happens in spring training. Spring training, good or bad, you kind of set that to a side because it's just spring training. But if they come back next year and they're staring down the barrel of another 3-8 start, like that, it's people are going to tense up really quick. You know, Tony's going to have to get off to a very, very fast start next season to dispel this notion that, as you say, the stench from this year is creeping into next year, because that will be the risk. And we will know very early in next year whether or not the risk was worth it. And it's kind of like with Buster Posey, the conversation we had last week. It's going to be one of probably three options for Tony as well. We're going to next year, and at some point he's going to, well, I guess it's two options because we know he's coming back. He's going to come back, and it's going to go really well, and we're going to sail off into the sunset, and everything's going to be candy and unicorns. Or option number two, it's going to look bad in May, and Jace Tingler or whoever else, you might be next man up in that situation there. We're going to know quickly next year is what I'm saying.
And I think I'm not surprised that, although I wouldn't bring him back, I'm not surprised that he's coming back at all, because this is more of a reflection on Buster Posey. Buster Posey cannot publicly admit he made another mistake. So there's no way that Tony Vitello was not getting another opportunity. And I wish the guy well. You know what I think he is at the end of the day? I was thinking of calling Pablo Torre because I think we need to do an investigative
piece. Torre's got to find out about Tony Vitello?
Yeah, he needs to investigate Tony Vitello. I think Tony Vitello, I heard him in another press conference and it just dawned on me. I think he's like AI. Like, I don't think he's real. He is like everything that comes out of his mouth is just like it's. I will tell you, I can give you his post-game press conference right now before they get smashed today by that of the Boston Red Sox. It's the same thing. It's the same demeanor. I've never seen him with his hat off. He doesn't necessarily have this genuine sort of personality. There's nothing about him that's like, oh, God, that was a real moment. It just, I think he's AI.
I don't know, man.
I think he's just like, you know, the technology is.
I don't think AI is talk about needing to crawl through the poop tube to get out of into the sunshine after a win on a Friday night. That seemed like a pretty genuine Tony Vitello moment. I don't know. I've seen moments this year where Tony just. I mean, he's different than the other managers, obviously, because he comes from a different background. And there's been moments where he seems just like a.
Have you seen the human moment? Obviously, he doesn't get mad. He's not.
Honestly, one of the funnier moments I've had with him this year is when I was talking about an A's game and he had to pull a bug out of his sweatshirt. That was a pretty funny moment. He didn't break at all. He's mid answer. He's pulling his bug out of his sweatshirt. Didn't get thrown off by it at all. I thought that was a really funny moment.
That's what I mean. It's that same sort of monotone delivery and. It's just like, it feels like something that tech dudes up in Silicon Valley created.
I am AI.
I don't think I'd ever imagine Tony Vitello compared to a tech guy, but I guess.
He's just lacking some personality.
I think he was hired not to be like that, which is the funny part.
Exactly. Yeah, he's supposed to be not that guy. He's supposed to be kind of like this, you know, Southwest or Southeast kind of rah-rah fun guy who's supposed to be injecting this energy. And I think, Dan, to your point, that has been the problem with Tony Vitello and what Rizzuto said. He was hired to not be that guy, and he's fallen into being that guy, and that's going to be the challenge he has the rest of the season and next season is setting that tone so that he can succeed here.
I was joking about the AI. You seemed really serious.
On the AI thing?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny that you brought that up because there's another clip I saw.
He's not AI.
What happened was you triggered a memory in a conversation I had with Spadoni this week because I saw a clip of Fernando Mendoza, obviously the Raiders quarterback, talking. I'm like, this guy looks like he's AI. So just when you said that, that's where my thought went to. Is this the second time this week we're seeing someone?
You're definitely not AI.
I am AI.
Oh, I'd love to see a Steiny AI. Tony Vitello's coming back here. Let's get this show back and going. Tony, we talked to Dave Fleming about Tony Vitello coming back. We'll play some of that sound on the other side as well. I also want to talk about Rafi Devers on this show, Dan, because he returned to Boston last night and he got booed. What a shocker. More, all that and more on the other side. We are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, Laughing Monk, Righteously Brewed in San Francisco. More Giants talk on the other side brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Now Devers to deep center field. Rafaela watches. Gone! Back at Fenway! Devers goes deep.
And now we're getting some smiles in the dugout. There we go. Boys are starting to get happy. You know this guy feels amazing.
Hey, he'll never forget that, ever. What a swing. It's 5-4.
Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7, The Game.
They didn't want you, Rafi. That's right, they didn't want you. And boy, were they maybe right on that one. Welcome back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Sam Lum alongside Dan Vone. Giants lose 6-4 to Rafi Devers' ex-team, the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park last night. And yeah, it's been not good since the Giants got Rafi Devers there. But again, that was a
34 fun to see games him. Under 500, I read.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad right now. In fact, the Giants, they put it up. I think their record, I wrote it down. They are now 92-126
since his arrival.
Since that trade. Yikes. But anyway, yeah, he got pretty heartily booed before the game and before his first at-bat. There were some people, though, standing up and giving him applause there. So, you know.
But doesn't that tell you everything you need to know? Like, let me just ask you this.
Well,
why would you boo Rafi Devers?
Well, no, it was not a very amicable divorce between team and player.
If you're a fan, why are you booing Rafi Devers?
Well, what you're seeing is a guy who, in your opinion as a fan, quit on your team. That is what you see. But here's the thing, Dan. I remember when this trade went down last year and the Red Sox were in town that next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Alex Cora being effusive in his praise of Rafi Devers. I remember Trevor Story being effusive in his praise of Rafi Devers. And I talked to a lot of Red Sox fans that weekend, and there were some that were irritated with Rafi. There was a lot of them who were irritated with how the front office handled things. Because remember, Rafi was their third baseman. They wanted to go get Bregman. They didn't check with him first. And you can say, oh, why do they have to check with him? They gave him a $295 million deal. That's why. Like, you gave him a contract that says you are one of the most important people in this franchise. And they went behind his back and signed a guy to play his position. They asked him to move to a different position without talking to him about it. And that's going to piss players off. You could say, again, well, why is that a big deal? It's a big deal on this level. It's a big deal when you have a contract of that size. And they asked him to move to first base. He begrudgingly went along with, or no, they asked him to DH, and he went along with it because he wanted to play the field. And, but he, again, he just went along with it because what else you got to do? He had no other choice. And then they asked him to play first base after Tristan Casas got hurt. And it gets to a point where it's just like, you know, you guys keep trying to move me around, you know, talk to me about this stuff. That's going to upset players of that ilk. Again, you could say, well, that sounds stupid, Sam. Like, you might not just play the position. You're a baseball player. Yeah, I agree with that. But also, this is Major League Baseball where guys are making hundreds of millions of dollars. They all have egos, and this is just the lay of the land. And so this is all to say the relationship between Rafi Devers and the Boston Red Sox had soured. I think a year ago, most fans were probably pissed off at the team. But the team's played really well since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets very easy to be not angry at your team, and then you're just going to get angry at the player who left. So that's how I read it. As I don't think it's a full, you know, referendum on Rafi Devers. Believe me, when Ruderman calls in later, he'll give that referendum on Rafi Devers. We know how he feels. But no, it's, I think it's...
But you didn't answer my question. It sounds as though you were defending Rafael Devers. And first of all, I think it's important to note that that's reported, because that sounds very much like it's coming out of Devers' camp. I don't know that that's necessarily... Usually, when you pull back the layers, there's more to stories than that. Mm-hmm. The Boston Red Sox did this, that, and the other thing. But we'll take it on face value. It doesn't answer my initial question. If what it is that you said is true, then everybody should have cheered Rafi Devers because he got a bad rap. So why boo him?
Well, no, because I still think there is a camp of people, and you're not wrong to think this. As I said, it is the lay of the land, but it is fair. Like, he did kind of just make a stink there, and he ended up kind of stinking his way, or making a stink to get his way out of Boston there. So yes, you could blame the organization for not handling the offseason very well and signing Bregman and pissing Rafi off. You can also get mad at Rafi Devers for not handling it very well either, and we've seen him not handle things very well in his time in San Francisco. You could blame both sides. You could blame the Red Sox for their version of the screw-up in it. You can also blame Rafi for his part in the screw-up in it. And I think that's why you saw, I mean, Boston fans, I don't think are the most happy of sports fans. They are East Coast fans, Dan, and East Coast fans are rarely ever happy. So that's a part of it as well.
They're real, Sam. It's not about
that. They're Boston fans. They'll boo anything that moves if given the
that's
opportunity.
Philadelphia.
They'll boo beans if given the opportunity. And they love their beans up in Beantown. but no, it's a both sides thing. And yeah, am I defending Rafi a little bit on this one? A little bit, yeah, because it's just, it was an ugly divorce on both sides that they went through. And Giants thought they could capitalize and fix him.
The reason why I asked is because what it is that we've seen with him, 34 games under 500, I don't know if that there's necessarily a there, at least I didn't initially, but when he didn't come out of the game, when he was asked to pinch run, mm-hmm. we know that there's something potentially a rift with him in management, and he came here with some baggage, and I think it's noteworthy that when a player is introduced at his former team and a guy that helped you win a World Series and you're booed, that maybe there is some insight that the Giants picked up a guy that is a malcontent.
Yeah, and he did have some history there. He did. Again, we saw in the, I think it was the Brick Rolly piece that we talked about last week. There is an excerpt in it that talked about how Rafi, when he was younger, would kind of rub some of the older players the wrong way in terms of he wouldn't lead the batting cage when the older players wanted to get in and other baseballism stuff like that. So, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Giants acquired a perfect little angel of a ball player and he was completely misunderstood. He did come here with baggage. The Giants thought that they could fix that baggage. There's the old change of scenery angle that we've seen in the past. And sometimes it is successful getting a guy a new situation. He ends up running with it. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, and it's hard to pinpoint exactly why. And that's something I want to dive into maybe later in the show here in terms of kind of talk about why this team has been bad since the Rafi Devers trade. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about the first thing we were talking about in this show, Dan. In 888-957-9570, Tony Vitello is coming back next year. That is a fact. We know that for sure. Buster Posey made it so, and that is going to be the case. So I want to hear from Giants fans, 888-957-9570. What has to be different for Tony next year? And let's just take the first one off the board here. Wins and losses. Yes, that needs to be different. But what needs to be different about this team? What needs to be different about Tony going into next year for you to feel like this was a smart move to make in bringing him back? We had Dave Fleming join us on the Morning Roast earlier this week, Dan. We asked him about why Tony is coming back. Here's what Dave had to say.
I'm happy that Tony's coming back. I don't think, again, like, there's nobody who's going to grade themselves on this year and say, gosh, I did an awesome job. Nobody. There's nobody down there who's thinking that right now, because obviously this season has gone sideways. But Tony has done a fine job. The players, I talk to players all the time. Players like Tony. Players think Tony is equipped to do the job. They feel bad that, in a way, their performance has made him look like he isn't, because I don't think they feel that way at all. So it's just so hard in a season like this to, like, what am I going to say about, like, what he's done well? Like, well, gosh, that one game, it just sounds so empty and hollow. I think you can point to some of the younger players who have made good strides and developments, Bryce Eldridge and Daniel Susak and Drew Gilbert when he's been playing more lately. And there are others, there are young players who have taken big steps forward. And in the midst of a losing season, I think the manager does get a little bit of credit for that, for helping create an environment where that development can still happen.
So you hear from Dave there. Again, Dave is around this team a lot, obviously, as the broadcaster. He does do the legwork and talking to these guys. He does say that, again, the players do like Tony. It's just a product of a season getting off the rails here. And, again, we've talked ad nauseum, Dan, as to why that is. Some people even point at the manager. And yes, Tony is a part of that. He was not good in utilizing his bench to start. He's had a lot of bullpen blunders. But we've also pointed at the Buster Posey angle, too, and the roster he's been given. I don't know, just what do you make of the fact that, again, Dave saying the players do like him is just a matter of...
Did he say that?
Yeah, he said, yeah, a lot of the players like him.
Collectively, whether the players like him. I think Dave Fleming was giving you the company line there. And when he says that he's done a fine job...
Well, I think a fine job with some of these young... with development of some of these younger players.
Well, he said Drew Gilbert and Bryce Eldridge.
Drew Gilbert's been playing pretty well.
And Susak, yeah,
Bryce Eldridge is looking very much like a legitimate big league ball player.
My point is how much of that is attributed to Tony Vitello?
Well, why wouldn't it be?
Well, because Bryce Eldridge is going to be a star no matter who the hell he's playing for. Bryce Eldridge is the real deal. You think that Bryce Eldridge's stardom is attributed to Tony Vitello?
I don't think any player is guaranteed for stardom. I mean, sure, there's the...
If anything, Tony Vitello was the guy who was pinch hitting him initially. If anything, Tony Vitello was the guy that was prohibiting his fast track
and
to
start. And that's why he's still struggling this year. Like, Bryce has been playing great this year. Like, this whole notion of
how much does Tony Vitello have take credit for Bryce Eldridge?
I mean, how much does he not get credit for? I mean, he is the manager. It is his coaching staff. The buck has to stop somewhere with him. We can't throw all the bad out there and say that's all Tony Vitello's fault, but there are legitimate good things that have happened with this team. But we pick and choose which good things we want to attribute, but all the bad things get attributed to him. Like, listen, this isn't... everyone's going to think, oh, here's Loban caping up for Tony V again. And yeah, maybe a little bit. There's been a lot that's gone wrong for Tony Vitello this year. That doesn't mean you can't acknowledge the few small things that have gone right for Tony Vitello.
I'm very open-minded to hear what's on his side or someone like you to defend Tony Vitello and provide me with a ledger of what it is that he's done right. But something as general as Bryce Eldridge... Tony Vitello gets credit for Bryce. Okay, maybe indirectly because he put him in the lineup, I guess. I'm not connecting.
Well, there's
that
a lot
dot.
Of who you don't see behind the scenes in terms of what this development looks like. I mean, Tony's out there working with these guys. He's doing infield drills with these guys. Like, It's not like Tony's just ignoring
Washington.
I mean, there's a lot of coaches who do a lot of different things, Tony.
I was hoping
I just called you Tony.
I thought there would be something a little bit more sort of tangible than...
Dan, they're on pace to lose 98 games. You're not going to get a whole lot of good tangibles on this team.
They're like, he's done something that's a little bit more viable that, again, to your point, or to use your phrase, that's behind the scenes that he's done, aside from giving him credit for Bryce Eldridge, which I will.
Well, it's not just Bryce. I think you could throw
the development
of Casey Schmidt, the development of Drew Gilbert's in there. Jung Hoo Lee's turned into an everyday big leaguer who you trust this year.
So you're just basically naming players that are having good years and then attaching it to Tony Vitello.
I mean,
Which you can. I'm just saying, I wish there was something a little bit more substantial.
Yeah, I wish we had more wins than losses. Like,
no, I get it.
Like, the season's been an abject disaster. There's no taking away from that. And Tony Vitello is... poor managing is a big part of that. But I'm just saying is the small wins that he does have, I do think still matter. Do they completely right the ship of the season? Absolutely not. Do they absolve him for how poorly this season's gone? Absolutely not. Should he be pissed off and sad after these losses? Yes, he absolutely should be. Like, he's been wearing these losses. We know that. But I still don't think that you just wash away, you know, development wins that this team has had underneath Tony Vitello.
Maybe you're right. I just wish that there was something there that I was unfamiliar with that somebody could enlighten me in saying, this is what Tony Vitello has been doing. This is what he's building. And this is what is going to happen to this team as far as the future that will continue to put them, that is something that they can build on. Yeah. And aside from attributing that the best players on the team are a result of Tony Vitello, I can go there to a certain degree, but you sort of lose me because Jung Hoo Lee's having a good season that Tony Vitello gets credit and the reason why he should be coming back. Part of it, yeah, okay, maybe the development.
No, not an end all be all reason. Like, none of these are end all be all reasons.
I just wish there was something else.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That I'm not familiar with that Tony Vitello is doing with the younger players specifically, something that he's doing as far as his relationship with the older players, or something that he's doing with the bullpen or handling players, or just something his overall communication with the team is something that I think is viable and that you can build off of and you can have a future with. But saying that Bryce Eldridge is having a good year, so Tony Vitello should get somewhat of a pass, or we should look at him a little differently.
Say we're saying a pass.
Okay,
Who's saying a pass here?
That's not fair.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying pass. You know what, Dan? You've given me my homework assignment for next Friday. When I get down to the ballpark early, I'm going to try and get there, and hopefully I'll run into your boy Cuckoo Gilbert and, you know, say, hey, Drew, what's been going on? I'll talk to Bryce about it as well. So I will try and find out what I can next week when I'm down at the ballpark, and maybe next Saturday we can play some answers. And
listen, he's a nice guy. I hope he does well.
Yeah.
I really do, because I'm a people person at the end of the day, and I like to see good people do well. And for the most part, from what I can gather, he seems like a really good guy. But I think this just gets back to sort of what you and I have talked about and what I strongly believe, that learning at the major league level is not something I would sign up for. That saying that you're now taking the training wheels off, or the fact that he has this learning curve in the mm-hmm. first year. He's sort of like a pledge or a newbie or a freshman. And, you know,
it's a fun week to mention pledges,
you know, and he's now has 1 year under his belt. Yeah. And he'll be better next year. I don't think you do that at the major league level. I don't think you learn at the expense of a baseball team that was, you know, that has a payroll that they have. And I know you didn't think they would go to the playoffs. I thought they could have, but I think that that's not something you do at the major league level. You learn at the minor league level. You learn by being a bench coach. You learn before you take over the reins.
Or, I mean, no, you're absolutely, and again, that's more, I think, philosophically that goes above Tony, because if that's the way you look at things, then the mistake was hiring Tony to begin with there. And that goes into looking at the front office and things as well. Like, it honestly feels like a big reason. The number one reason why you bring Tony back is because I think it's to your point you said in the first segment, Dan, you don't want to admit the mistake. And I think Buster knows that if Tony doesn't come back, that starts the domino effect of now he's not coming back. And now you're starting all things completely over again with your front office. And so, you know, that's, I think, goes into the calculus in terms of why they want to bring Tony back. They don't want to hit a hard reset. The Giants think that, hey, we have a farm system trending in the right direction. We got players now in that farm system. We've got more power pitching in that farm system than we can believe in. And
we're getting into a tugboat.
we got to get into Tugboat at some time too. So I will definitely do that as well. 888-95. Anyway, finishing up that thought here on the whole bringing Vitello back. And I'm sure there's a lot of Giants fans who just don't want to hear the reasons why Tony should be back, because they're of the ilk that Tony just needs to go. They're kind of like you, Dan. They're not buying this experiment. There's a reason why a college baseball coach has never made the leap. Giants thought they could break through that wall. And there's almost kind of a Moneyball aspect to it, Dan, where when that whole thing went down, everyone was going at Billy Bean. You can't use a computer to win baseball games. And what have we learned since then? Hey, those computers, they can actually help us win baseball games. And I believe there's a line from the movie that it's like the first one through the wall is always the bloodiest. The first one through the wall has always looked like the crazy guy. Is that what the Giants are doing here? Are they the bloody ones through the wall who are learning the hard way, the difficulty of doing something that has never been done before, using a college manager to win?
I appreciate that.
Like, they are experimenting here. The thing about experiments, Dan, is sometimes they go one way, sometimes they go horrifically wrong, which is what we're getting right here. It doesn't mean that it's over. It just means they're going to try and learn what they did this year, run it back next year. If it blows up in our face, that's going to really suck, and we'll get through that together.
Because you're one of the few, and I can appreciate that, because usually I'm sitting on that side of the fence. But can you tell me, other than giving him credit for Bryce Eldridge and Jung-Hoo Lee and Casey Schmidt's breakthrough year, why should they bring him back? Because you seem like the one guy who's equipped, and I'm not trying to be cute by asking you this, but you're probably the one guy who's equipped and willing to defend one Tony Vitello, which I fully appreciate. Mm-hmm. So just lay out why you think he should come back.
I think the reason why you bring him back is, again, the goal was for him to come in and inject some energy in this team.
Okay.
I think for a minute you had that early in the season. I think you wanted to bring him in because you know you're a team that's going through a rebuild. You want a young manager who you can have come up with your younger players. You have your younger players. You have your young, energetic manager. You have a path set forward for you. And this is why I said at the beginning of the year, I think he would have been better having a roster that more or less looked like this to start the year. A team that was just stripped down to the studs and he could build up with it, because that is more suited for what he's been working with in college. Like, imagine if Tony had the teams that he had in Tennessee, but instead of graduating, he just like kept those teams.
He was equipped to manage this team, then he should have been managing the River Cats.
Oh, see, then I think this is... Risotto, get Ruderman on the line, because we need to talk about this minor league thing here. Because that's what Ruderman said. Should have had him start in the minors. My thing is, you were never convincing a guy to leave the comfy confines of Knoxville, Tennessee, where he's the king of that city, and have him go manage the Richmond Flying Squirrels for a fraction of that salary. That's just not how this business... Like, no one is doing that. Yeah, I just don't see that happening in this day and age. And maybe then that gets into the, well, that's why you never should have ventured down this path to begin with, to which I counter with, well, they're trying out something new and different. We're going to see just how that looks here. So
is that your dad on the line?
I think it might be. 888-957-9570 is the number to call or text. He said he's on his way to the golf course. So
no S-bombs.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's go to Jimmy in Santa Rosa.
Hey, what's up, guys? Love the show. Entertaining. Kind of sad that you guys will be going away soon once the season ends. But regardless, what you want to give Vitello credit for, you got to show your true colors next year, or else he's literally going to be Mike Montgomery 2.0 with the Warriors. We all know how that went. Regarding Willie, which to me is the major red flag heading into next season, I know you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Lumbin, you appreciate the effort he's still giving right now. That grace, from me at least, left 2-3 months ago. At Fair. This point, it's self-sabotage, sabotaging himself, his manager, his teammates, the pitchers on the mound. You know, you mentioned Thursday, the two errors, he's grabbing at the back again. No, Willie, that excuse is out the window. We gave you a couple days off. You're fighting everyone, the media, your coach. I want to be on the field. No, Willie, those excuses are done. If you're grabbing your back, get off the field. Save your pitcher's pitches. It's enough. C.J. Abrams, a perennial MVP, got moved to second base. That has to be explored with Willie. You are not good enough, Willie, to call your shots. You've never been an all-star in your life. Oh, hey, awesome, man. You hit 30 home runs. The record that hadn't been broken by a Giants player in however many years, who cares? You're not good enough. You're barely hitting above a 700 OPS. You are arguably the worst shortstop in the league. No, no, Willie, you got the money. Put the results need a show next year, or else, guys, this is going to be the same season all over again. He holds too much weight in that locker room for whatever reason. It needs to change, and it has to be instant next season, because you said it, Loveman. If this team gets off to 10 games under 500, 20 games in, it is not going to be fun, and Vitello will literally be Mike Montgomery 2.0. And it's weird with Willie, because I feel with, like, you know, comparing them to Pods, there's outrage with Pods. And, you know, I'm outraged with Willie right now. But I feel like, do people care about Willie? Has he been embraced by San Francisco, by the fans that field that stadium?
I don't think he has, Jimmy.
Every time they're there?
I don't think he's been fully embraced. How many number two jerseys are you seeing at the ballpark?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what's crazy to me, because I cannot recall since Barry Bonds a player who has seemingly called his shot in that Giant dugout locker room since Barry Bonds. And really, maybe any Bay Area athlete since him. He seems to do what he wants, when he wants. If he wants to have an excuse that grab at his back, hey, do it all you want. Tony's not going to call you out. Tony's gonna like kind of call you out and then backtrack. And I'm kind of rambling now, but I kind of
Jimmy, you're cooking right now, man. Keep going.
I kind of understand what Devone said earlier, where it's not AI, but I kind of know that Tony is going to say something and he's going to kind of backtrack a little bit, because he just cannot call out his players. Yeah. He cannot. And this whole, oh, if he had younger players, tennis guys, this is Major League Baseball. What are we talking about?
Thanks for the call, Jimmy. So that was a different Jimmy than the one I was expecting. I did tell my dad to call in. That's why I thought it was him. But wow, Jimmy in Santa Rosa.
I like it.
Cook. I wanted to let him go for another 5 minutes, but we are out of break. So let's keep this Tony conversation going on this side. And yeah, the Tony-Willie dynamic, that has to be different going into next year. We'll talk about that on the other side, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.